Ahoy, Van. Welcome aboard to the Rum Runners podcast, hosted by Guy and Deco Gentlemen. We love all things rum and tiki, and we invite you to join us as we share our rum-related experiences and our favourite bottles. We do not claim to be rum experts and welcome your interaction as we strive to make a fun, rum-loving community running the joys of rum throughout the airwaves. Whether you prefer Ron, rum, or rum, you're in for a great time. Music is The Buccaneers Hall, provided by Shane Ivers. Without further ado, here's your host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Rum Runners podcast. I'm your host, Deco, and I'm joined by Guy and his Guy's Tiki Lounge.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Glad to have everybody here. This is a brand new podcast. Both of us love rum and just wanted an opportunity to talk about it and share it with everybody. As our intro states, we do not claim to be rum experts. We aren't going to sit here and just, you know, expound upon our knowledge or anything like that. We just want to share experiences and our love for rum and our favorite bottles. And we invite you to interact with us. There will be an email address in our show notes where you can send us questions or comments. And without further ado, our first rum that we both have had a recent shared experience with is Dr. Bird out of 2 James Distillery in Detroit. Guy actually recently picked that up, and I'm curious to hear his thoughts about it.
Yeah, it was quite a surprise to find out that this rum was right in my backyard. So I picked one up and loved the bottle, loved sort of the traditional throwback Jamaican look of the whole rum bottle and everything. And I always have high expectations for rums, right? I want to taste something different, and I want to experience something different. And this being a pot-stilled rum, and me not being as familiar with that in terms of rum versus like a whiskey or something else where that's more traditional, you know, I had an expectation of what I sort of feel is sort of a dirty taste. It's going to have a lot of notes in it and various other things. So I was very excited, and I broke out the bottle, and I tried it 2 different ways. I tried it just as a rum to taste what it would taste like. And then I used my my sample mix, my cliche, as I call it, which is just a mix of a lime, pineapple juice, ice, potentially a splash of Falernum, and then a couple of shots of whatever the rum is. And for my taste and my personal experience, I was overwhelmed by the pot distilled essence of the rum, which is, it tends to for me to be more like a moonshine than a rum than I expected. So for me, and I hate to even say this, I'm embarrassed to say the notes were lost on me because of the overwhelming harshness of sort of the moonshine essence of the pot distilled rum. So I'm having a difficult time judging it, but I did feel like it really challenged me in terms of mixing it with something where I couldn't get a drink I was happy with the pot stilled rum.
Yeah. Very interesting. And I think I know Smith and Cross, which you also have experience with, is 100% pot still. What did you think the similarities or differences were with that one?
See, that's interesting that you say that, and here's where my rum ignorance will shine through. Despite being a rum person, I didn't realize the Smith and Cross was pot stilled, and for my money, mixes very well. Mm-hmm. It's a very smooth, high quality rum, and when it intermixes with other drink elements, especially around like a tiki style drink, I think the Smith and Cross has been stellar. And doesn't seem to carry that moonshiny edge to it that I associate with the pot distilled.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying with that. And they are very different rums, even though they're both pot stilled. I don't know what the age difference is on the two of them. I think Dr. Bird is about 5. Smith and Cross might be similar, but it's such a higher proof. And I think it really hits you a lot more in the cocktail for sure. What did you think about Dr. Bird just drinking it neat? Is it something you'd want to drink neat, or, you know, was it just kind of too lost on you with the notes with that kind of moonshiny taste to it?
Yeah, it was very harsh to me. And maybe I've been spoiled by some of the more top shelf sipping rums, but for my money, it would never be a sipping rum in my repertoire, just because I don't want that harsh, less distilled purity taste. That's just personal preference. And I didn't think for my palate, the notes were overwhelmed by that.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely really unique when you first get that scent of it. It kind of reminds me of Smith & Cross with the scent. I don't know if it did you at all when you smell it before you actually pour it out of the bottle, but kind of like that rotting fruit type of smell.
Yeah, it was interesting. As a matter of fact, I got the bottle here, and oh nope, I threw it behind the shelf. It was interesting because every time I smelled it, I thought it smelled slightly different, which was kind of unique, right. And kind of neat. I'm just like, what does that smell like? And then I tried again. It's like, wait, that's not what I smelled the first time. So there is a lot going on in that mix. And I'm hoping that potentially I can come up with something, or somebody else can come up with something, a better way to use that rum to better accentuate its strengths rather than, failing how I did.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't consider it a failure as much as you know you just don't like it, I guess, mixed that way. And it's really unique. And you know, I definitely see what you're saying with a lot of it. I really enjoyed tasting it by itself because I got so much of that like rotting pineapple fruit flavor to it. But I have to say it was so much more light bodied than I expected for a pot still Jamaican rum. Especially compared to Smith and Cross, where you just, it feels like you're getting punched in the back of the throat with that thing. And it tastes very full bodied. And this one almost has a lighter, almost like a white rum Spanish consistency to it. And you look at it, I have a little bit in a glass, which obviously our audience can't see, but it's really light colored. And, you know, Smith and Cross kind of has that darker color to it when it comes out of the bottle. And the bottle of Dr. Bird is extremely dark. And as Guy mentioned, has this old school logo on it, which is really cool. It looks like it's straight out of the 1800s. So when you pour the liquid out, it looks so light and like a very light amber hue. So I was extremely surprised by how light bodied it is. But I do enjoy sipping it because you get so much of that more subdued funk from Dr. Bird. It's 50% as opposed to Smith & Cross, excuse me. I think Smith & Cross is about 60, if I'm not mistaken. And now it's considered Navy strength.
Yeah, well, then it would have to be over 50, yeah, right? Yeah. So, because normally the pot stills are, what, 40 or 50? And the Smith & Cross is stronger, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Dr. Bird's, I think it's an even 50. Yeah, that's what it says in the bottle.
Yeah.
So it's, I think to me it's more approachable as a sipper. I've gotten to the point where I can sip Smith & Cross, but it's still a little tough on the esophagus. So I like that I can sip this and I can kind of pick apart those really fruity, rotting fruity flavors to it. I mean, when I first tasted it, like you said, I couldn't pick anything out of it because it's like you're getting hit with a million flavors at the same time. And it has this kind of weird dry aftertaste where it kind of just drops off your tongue almost immediately. The more I've sipped on it, the more I've appreciated some of the pineapple. I think I may get a little bit of mango in there, different fruits. And it's not as harsh on my esophagus. I can pretty easily just sip it. But everybody else I've had try it, my brother, my friend, I mean, they were pretty taken aback at the funkiness and the flavors of it. But in cocktails, I think it is a little light to directly sub into a lot of the recipes. I had a little bit of challenge with that too. I'm trying to think what cocktail I made with it. I did develop one last night that I think it works quite well in, but there was one where it was kind of, it was a little too light body. I think a Dark and Stormy, I tried to modify a Dark and Stormy with it where I put in like I mixed it with some pineapple juice, I think some lime juice and maybe another ingredient, shook it together with ice, then put it in a glass and then added the ginger beer on top. And it was tasty, but it was just so light bodied for a Dark and Stormy. I think it's a good blending rum. I think you need to have a darker rum to go with it. So last night I played around with a recipe that I actually developed myself after going to a local bar in Seattle. It's a very casual kind of dive bar place where they non-COVID times do drag shows and stuff. So their drinks are more to be cheap and taste good. and they have a drink that's called Jamaican Love that I really like. It has Myers, which I know I might get flack for because it's very low end Jamaican rum.
Yes.
But I think it's still a fun rum to mix in that's not going to break the bank and has some good flavors when you mix it with juices. But I modified this drink based off the ingredients I thought they put in it. And I did an ounce of Dr. Bird, an ounce of Hamilton 86, which I think is one of the best Demerara rums you can get. There's no added sweetener or anything.
Oh, my gosh. It. We'll be talking about that rum in the future. I definitely agree with you. That is a favorite.
Yeah, we can definitely have its own episode on that one. But I don't think there's anything better than a mix of Jamaican and Guyana rums together. Oh, they're so good. And so to me, the Guyana rum gave it some of that dark body that the Dr. Bird's lacking that you get in so many other Jamaican rums. And I did an ounce of pineapple juice, an ounce of lime, an ounce of lemon, I think half an ounce of passion fruit puree. And then I did half to a quarter ounce of Demerara syrup. Shook it together and straight it into a tiki glass with some ice. And it was really, really tasty. It kind of mimicked it had very much of a similar full bodied feel to the Myers, but much more top shelf tasting where you can pick apart those particular notes and it tastes much more refined. And I think that really elevated the cocktail. And the Dr. Bird gives it that nice funk and that distinctive kind of rotting fruit kind of flavor. Whereas the Demerara gives it that really full-bodied, like matured rum taste. And I thought they did pretty well together.
I think you really, really nailed this one. Yeah, I was so thrown off by the light color and the lack of age, the visual or normal attributes that you would expect to be with the aging of various other things. I don't think I really hooked in on what your point was, is this is a really good rum to combine with another rum in a drink. And hearing you say that, as soon as you started talking about this alternate dark and stormy, I'm like, oh my gosh, I missed the boat. That's perfect. This is a rum that wants to complement another rum. And I couldn't put my finger on it when I was mixing it, but I think that's really it, that this is a complementary type rum. It allows something else, some other rum, to draw its notes out and recombine into something special. And the first thing I'm going to do later tonight is I'm going to do that. I'm going to retry this rum with another rum and see if I can find a good combination. I'll start with yours, or maybe I'll use the Black Seal instead of the Myers. But
oh, that sounds good.
That is just an excellent, excellent assessment of a good way to utilize this rum and really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And I've had this bottle granted for about a month, if not longer. So it's taken me quite a few tries to realize that it really needs to go with another rum. I haven't made a daiquiri with it. It might be okay by itself in a daiquiri because lighter rums do better in that. But yeah, it's a very unique bottling where it has the Jamaican flavor, but it just doesn't have the full bodiness of it, almost like a Spanish rum.
Yeah, I think that's a another good point. And it does mix like a white rum, even though it isn't. And that's sort of something that got lost to me in the shorter time span I had to work with it. But that's definitely, I think, the key to this one is treat it like a very complex white rum instead of a simple, different kind of rum. And you'll get the most out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when I was buying this bottle, I was kind of thinking it might be something to replace my Smith and Cross for a while. But I think both of us have come to the conclusion that it's not really a replacement. And anything, it's more of an enhancer. I'd almost use it the same way I would like a Ray and Nephew overproof.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's also very creative. Yeah, I'm gonna use it as a complement for a one or two rum drink that maybe is a little too generic, and then I can use this to add some of that some of those dirty notes to an otherwise simpler drink. But I'll do some searching for complementary rums. I think that's excellent.
And I think like you said, teaming it with Black Seal is an excellent suggestion. You have that creamy, darker rum to go with it. I'd be really curious to know how that turns out. I don't have that rum to try it out, so you'll have to definitely touch base with us next episode about how that worked.
I definitely will. I'm looking forward to that now tonight.
And I'm I think I'd love to hear also your story with getting the bottle, because I know when we were doing some prep for this podcast, Guy and I were talking, and I brought up Dr. Bird because I was kind of excited about picking it up recently, and he hadn't heard of the rum before, and it turns out it's at a distillery that's fairly close to him that he had been to before. I think it had gone through a move. So I'd love to hear his journey to go out to the distillery and what that was like, because I'm multiple states away buying it at a store. So why don't you tell us about that, Guy?
Well, I did cheat a little, but I'll get to that. So yeah, it was a little embarrassing. I was vaguely familiar with Two Spirits because they were on the west coast of the state, out Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids way. And I might have run across them. I might even have been there when I was out in Grand Rapids. But, you know, now I'm back on the east side of the state in the Detroit area and didn't think twice about it. And when they released Dr. Bird, I didn't put two and two together. But when you mentioned it was, you know, in Detroit, I was like, what? That can't be right. You know, and I think maybe because of the pandemic, we forget to look around as much, you know, because we're so used to being stuck at home. Turns out they're in my own backyard, right? They're 20 minutes downtown. And, you know, I was easily able to procure a bottle now at any of the local liquor stores because they're on the Michigan list for being a Michigan distillery. So I literally could run to the gas station at the corner and get a Dr. Bird, which was fabulous. So I haven't been down to the distillery yet. I'm looking forward to doing that when it gets a little warmer and we could be outside. But it was sort of funny to me that I'm having a heck of a time right now getting Hamilton, but I could walk down to, you know, to any party store now in Michigan and get Dr. Bird. So kind of feast or famine right now.
Right. Yeah. Hamilton is a tough one for both of us. I live in the Seattle area, and Washington State doesn't have liquor control for a while now, and it's available at pretty much any store. And so there's not even an approved list. It's just whatever the local stores decide they want to carry. And Total Wine probably has the best selection in the state. But there's some other liquor stores. There's one in Seattle where I picked up the Dr. Bird, which is the only store I know of that has it, called Esquin Spirits, in case anybody is familiar with the area. But they don't have any Hamilton. They have a lot of other incredible rums, and they have really unique ones from Africa I'd never heard about before, but no Hamilton for whatever reason. I have to go down to Oregon to get it, so the state-controlled liquor stores there, which one thing I like about their state-controlled liquor stores is you can go on a website and you can search for anything in their inventory, and it'll tell you what store has it and how many bottles, which is really neat. And then there's no tax, sales tax in Oregon, and the liquor tax is built in, so you know exactly what you're going to pay before you even go to the store. So I've gotten Hamilton, Hamilton Jamaican Pot Still Black, which I think is an incredible rum, when I was down in Portland last time. And then the only way I could get Demerara, the 86, because they don't have it even in Oregon, was my parents went to Florida on a trip in December, and they brought me back a bottle as a Christmas surprise. But it's so funny how hard it is to get Hamilton. But right. I have Total Wine, where you have like all the four squares pretty much. And then you have their, what is it called? Their Spirits Direct, where they have the Dourleys, which is a great value. So it's like give or take what you can get some good ones, but you can't get some other ones.
At the risk of being influxed by people going, oh my gosh, my local liquor store, which is a pretty good one. There's like four bottles of Foursquare 2008 right now, four bottles of Saga. I mean, even after the ones I bought, right. They've got a big shelf of them, and people are, I know, looking all over for them. And here I am looking at them clogging the racks. But even now I'm out of Hamilton 86 and I haven't been able to replace it. I have the 151 overproof right now, right. Which is phenomenal. Well, something to talk about in the future, but that is an amazing for an overproof type rum, you know, darker aged rum of that type. It's just unbelievably easy to mix with things. And I'm almost humbled by my lack of creativity in getting the Dr. Bird to work. So now I'm up for the challenge. So whatever we do for next week, I will come not just with a Dr. Bird retrofit story of something I've pulled off, but a potentially simple and elaborate versions of something I've gotten to work for whatever our next rum is of choice.
Yeah. No, I'm excited for that. I'm really curious to see what you come up with. Your tiki bar looks very well stocked and you have a lot of experience. So I can only imagine what you're going to come up with. And you only had a night to work with it. So I think it's pretty understandable that the first cocktail didn't exactly come out as you expected. But I think it's really neat also that you have a base recipe where you can test a rum out, see if it works or not, and go from there. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that recipe that you always use? Because that fascinates me.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I call it the cliche because it's such a stupid, simple, repeatable recipe. I just take some of the organic fresh, either fresh pineapple or organic pure brand that is unsweetened and pulpy and all natural pineapple. And I'm going to fill a third of the glass with that, a third with ice. And then I'm going to put two shots of that, whatever rum I'm testing in, a squeezed lime, which I'll just, you know, a smaller lime, but I'll cut it and squeeze it right into the shaker. And then, potentially a splash of Fowlerdom just to sweeten against the sour of the lime.
Is that the velvet Fowlerdom?
Yes, exactly. Our trade of choice. There are others out there, but for my money, the ingredients list is not as pure as velvet. And I, you know, I'm not a corn syrup person. I'm not an artificial flavoring person. I want to get as much of that purity as I can. So, I'll splash that in there, mix it really well or shake it. And then, I pour it back into, one of the smaller tiki mugs, maybe a coconut mug or something like that. And in some cases, when I need something more elaborate, I'll go to the painkiller recipe and, you know, model in some coconut cream or various other things. But I like to keep it simple when I'm first trying it, so I can really see what that rum tastes like. And oftentimes it acts as a launch pad into, oh, okay, now that I know what this is like and what works and doesn't work, this is where I'm going to go from there. Which is what frustrated me last night is normally that just comes to me instantly. And I was a bit stymied by Dr. Bird. So I'm looking forward to giving it another try tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it might actually be pretty good for the painkiller. When you have all that pineapple, I think it pairs excellently with pineapple. Maybe, you know, you put the black still or another darker rum in with it.
I tend to agree. And in mid-sentence, I think that's what I was thinking of is, you know, a painkiller might be a really good choice for Dr. Bird, and see how that comes out. I'm really curious. I know it's used to the purses, nice pronunciation. But I'd like to see how it would work with the Dr. Bird.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what your thoughts are if you end up trying it in that. And just to touch base a little bit on the product itself, for those who aren't familiar, it's a rum, as I kind of mentioned before, that comes actually from Jamaica. I believe, based off what I've read on Rum Reddit and some other places, a lot of people think it's probably Worthy Park, and it's about 5 years distilled and aged there. And then it goes to Michigan to the distillery there. And it's aged, I believe, in Muscatel. You'll have to correct my pronunciation, guy, if I butchered that one.
Pretty close. Cool. I think it's Muscatel. Yeah,
Muscatel.
It's made from a certain type of grapes. In the early American lexicon, it was a very cheap wine, a Muscatel. Of course, everything could be elevated nowadays into something more prestigious. But in say the 30s and 40s, that was your Boone's Farm of wines, right? And now it's I'm sure a much better thing. But it has it's a very pungent grape, so that those notes are very interesting to bleed into the rum, and not overpowering at all. Like say when they do some of these rums in these ex whiskey barrels, where it just, you know, overpowers everything.
Right. And then, like, I have a Foursquare Sagacity City, which is in Madeira cast, and you get that Madeira finish immediately. And with the Dr. Bird, it, like you said, it really wasn't overwhelming from the wine barrel.
I've been a little weary of picking up one of those bottles of Foursquare because of that, that, you know, I'm going to pick up a $100 bottle of rum and not like it. But I, you know, I'm waffling because I do like the 2008 so much,
right.
That, you know, do I risk it? Do I not risk it? I don't know. It's not like I don't have another rum to pick off the shelf at this point.
There's no shortage. That's for sure.
Right.
When I went to that new store it's not a new store, but new to me in Seattle, where I got the Dr. Bird, I mean, I could spend my entire paycheck there without any issue. It's just always so many rums to buy, and it's such an addicting hobby, I think.
It really is, right? Because it's sort of that, it could be the after-work cordial, it could sort of be the Friday night, hang around the house, date night sort of drink, but it could also just be a wonderful mixing event drink, whether it's tiki or party. Rums are so much more fun to work with, I think, than other liquors, just because of the wide range of interesting notes and flavors that come with it. Unlike, say, maybe the opposite, like vodka, which is always feels like that you're painting a wall in white.
Right.
You know, it just whatever the mixers are, that's what it is. And rum is so much more fun to discover. And it's got to be much more fun for the distillers, too, because everyone is going to come out so unique that they can really hang their hat on something that comes out good.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that. And just to tie off kind of our very informal review of Dr. Bird, I'm curious, how much did you pay for the bottle?
I'll have to admit that I wasn't price sensitive coming into this, so I didn't even pay attention. I just grabbed it off the shelf, grabbed a couple of bottles of Caprini mix, and went through the register. So nice. I don't know. I'll make a note of it next time I do this so that I sort of keep track of that. But it wasn't anything that alarmed me or caught my attention.
Yeah, I can only assume it was a little less for you being in state. And for me, it was a very good value price, I think. It was about 30, I'd say it was 35, 36 for me. So I would imagine yours would hopefully be a little under 30 being in Michigan.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it wasn't even something that raised an eyebrow.
Right.
So it couldn't have been that expensive. And then that, yeah, it's, with it being in my backyard, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and personally, with that price tag and it being such a, I don't know, a pot still Jamaican rum and everything. And I think that you can mix it well. It just takes a little bit of blending. And personally, I like sipping it by myself. I would recommend it without hesitation, as long as you like funk and you're willing to play around with it. If you're not into that, you're going to think it's disgusting and you will probably not want to drink it at all. But personally, I'd recommend it to somebody who knows what they're getting into. You know, at that price, I don't think you're going to have much buyer's remorse. But I'm curious, Guy, with your experience, if you would recommend it to people.
I'm gonna grade myself incomplete now at this time. I'm willing to bet that my opinion on it is going to change over the next week when I have some time to work with it. And I'm gonna sort of take that up as a mantle now, is that I need a couple of days to work with a rum and feel like I know what I can get out of it, rather than sort of get to a conclusion too early and let that color my thinking. So I'll grade myself incomplete on this before I recommend it, but I'll come back and retroactively grade it for the upcoming episode.
That sounds good. Yeah, we'll definitely, next episode, we'll have a different rum, but we will certainly touch back on Dr. Bird and see what Guy was able to come up with it, and how he ultimately rates it.
Yeah, I'm going to start with your drink, though. I thought that was excellent.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you. I can definitely send you the recipe, and I can post it to the show notes, too, in case anybody else is willing to try it, or wants to try it, rather. And, yeah, I can't take full credit for it since I kind of made it a riff on a restaurant's, but I honestly don't even know exactly what they put in theirs. I just know for a fact I have Myers in it and pineapple juice. So it, it's always – I think it's really fun to go to a bar or a restaurant, and if you have a cocktail – that you really like, try to recreate it at home. And I think it helps you experiment with flavors and liquors more. And it's kind of like cooking, where you just see what goes together. And some restaurants make it easier than others. I recreated one recipe pretty close because they had all the ingredients. And, you know, once you have enough experience making drinks, you can kind of guess as to the proportions and what works together. But it's definitely harder if they don't really tell you many of the ingredients. You have to do it directly off taste.
Yeah. Sometimes the bartender will be more revealing than he's supposed to be. But I agree with you that it's really fun to be surprised by a new cocktail at a club or a bar and go, oh my gosh, I'm going to try and make that again. And I've got a couple of stories on those for futures where that happened. And when we ran home and found some very, very intriguing recipes by trying to recreate another recipe and ended up with something completely different, but just as good. And you can really surprise yourself. It's a lot of fun trying to do that. Like you said, like with cooking, you know the taste, you know the end. You just have to work your way there from the beginning.
Absolutely. Like working backwards, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially if you have hit kind of a wall with all your recipes that you, you've tried over time and you know, you're getting kind of bored with what you have. If you, obviously in a COVID world, it's a little different right now, but they're like Washington State's opening back up to 25% capacity. And if you go out occasionally and have a drink, you can go home and recreate it. And I think it's really a really good way to kind of keep yourself really active and what's popular at the time and then what you can do to keep making your drinks more interesting.
Yeah. And a lot of bars will list major ingredients in drinks and they'll leave off little things like a splash of bitters or a pinch of this and you'll make it. You'll be like, what's wrong here? So keep that in the back of your mind that you have an arsenal of bar accoutrements that might not be listed in the drink, but are very common like bitters or something like that. And bitters are particularly good with some rums. So there's definitely a case to be made to have those two or three majors on hand so that you can add a note of something that you feel is missing to a drink.
And that's an excellent point. And I have the basics like your orange bitters, Angostura, Pichaud's, and my brother got me some cardamom bitters that were on closeout from a place because they were liquidating some of their higher end bar inventory because it wasn't selling very well. And the cardamom bitters, I think, are really fun to play around with rum. And it kind of gives that little bit of a spiciness to the drink, especially if you're not using a rum that's already a little spicy. So I think that one's kind of fun. But I'm curious, Guy, what type of bitters you like with all your tiki experience? Because I have a pretty limited bitters compared to some people.
Well, it's funny. You just mentioned the big three, right? Which are the best ones. And I had never heard of cardamom rum until just this second. And now my brain is just exploding thinking, oh my gosh. So now I'll be looking for that. And I've really shied away from bitters experimentation, which is horrible because to me, it's the giant Pandora's box, right? There's like 100 different kinds after you get past the big three. And I've tried a couple. I've tried some foaming bitters that sort of give you this dry ice effect to your drink.
Oh, that's cool.
But it didn't really accentuate the taste any, so it was more of a novelty. And I know I've tried some off-brand versions and was disappointed. And every time I go to the rum store and I look at that shelf and they have four shelves full of bitters, I just think to myself, oh my gosh, if I start down this road, I'm going to be in big trouble. But that's what I'm going to do. So next time I go to buy our next bottle, I am going to also pick a bitters I've never worked with and force myself to start that journey too and see what we can come up with that's sort of outside the norm. But I love the orange bitters more than anything else. I think that especially if you're making a drink with pineapple juice and you don't want the overpowering citric acidity of the orange juice, splashing it with some orange bitters to sort of get that essence, I like doing that a lot too.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think that's fantastic. I've played around with using orange bitters in Mai Tais. So when I went to Hawaii, I went to it was about a year ago. I went to a higher end restaurant called Bill's Hawaii. I think it's from Australia originally, the restaurant. And their Mai Tai tasted so orangey. I just loved it. I just, it just kind of highlighted to me, that's one thing I love about a Mai Tai is it has that orange flavor, kind of similar to an old fashioned with me too. I just love the orange. So to try to replicate a little bit what they were doing, and admittedly, I don't always use the best orange liqueur in mine because I have a hard time spending $50, $60 on like the Ferran's orange carousel when I'm buying so many rum bottles. It's really hard for me to justify the $50, $60. But adding a little bit of the orange bitters, like you said, it really, I think, takes that citrus to a new level. And in orange juice, like you said, can change the consistency of the drink a lot. And
yeah, it's so acidic. Yeah. But now let me get this straight. You had a Mai Tai in Hawaii in an Australian restaurant.
It does sound a little unique.
It does.
I think the restaurant chain is Bill's. Maybe it's Bill's Australia or just called Bill's there. So I guess being so touristy, and there's so many Aussies that go to Hawaii. I lived in Australia for about a year, and I hadn't even been to Hawaii yet at that point. It was back in like 2015, 16. And almost every Australian I had met had been to Hawaii. So it was a little awkward not having been myself. And I thought it was funny that they like going there because it's tropical and so many parts of Australia are tropical. But, you know, since having been to Hawaii, I can see why. It's just, it's so unique. It's like this little tropical paradise and these small islands and the culture and everything. But I think that's probably part of the reason they opened up a restaurant in Hawaii is because there's so many Aussies that go there. But they made an excellent Mai Tai, and they made it with Florida Canyon probably 7 year, which I hadn't really had a lot of exposure to Florida Canyon until I went there. And I saw that was kind of a trendy thing that a lot of the places were using. And Hawaii has so many, you know, for lack of a better word, bastardized Mai Tais with dumping in pineapple juice and orange juice and all kinds of fruit juices, which is not what the original recipe had at all. But this one was, you know, very much done properly. You could tell it had the orgeo in it and, you know, a good rum, good base and all that stuff, lots of lime juice. But I just was fascinated by how orangey it tasted and had to replicate that myself when I got home.
Yeah, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But when it works, it's wonderful. It's wonderful getting that orange taste without all that acid bite back from orange juice. So when you can find something like that, it's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your go-to brand for orange bitters?
Wow, that's a good question.
I am using Fee Brothers. I thought I was. I just wanted to double check.
Fee Brothers. Yeah, that's what I have been using most recently too. That one has some of the most pure orange taste to it that I think I've tried so far.
I've always been, especially with the for whatever reason, their orange bitters. I've just always been enamored with that the flavor of their orange bitters. So I am going to I am definitely going to try something new and hopefully not overly exotic. But I'm gonna try some new bitters for the next week too.
Cool. Maybe I'll have to do the same. I like you said yourself, I haven't gotten into the bitters experimentation as much. I like having the basics, and I think they pair well with a lot of the other creativity where you find different liqueurs and liquors. But yeah, like you said, I haven't been willing to jump down the bitters rabbit hole yet, but you go to Total Wine and they have everything from lime bitters, peach bitters, grapefruit bitters, chocolate bitters. I mean, it seems pretty limitless.
And there are so many rabbit holes to go down. You know, I've been mixing tiki drinks for like 10 years now, and there are so many different rabbit holes. If it's not bitters, if it's not mixers, it could be fresh fruit. So that's our big adventure rabbit hole for next week. Is actually we're going to the Asian market to pick up Taiwanese fruits so that we could mix drinks with dragon fruit or manganese or something like that. So that's a big rabbit hole too, because some of those drinks are, every time you make them, they taste slightly different depending on the fruit and what its exact state is when you make the drink and how you prepare it. So those are always wonderful experiments, especially if you put drinks in front of people and they say, I've never tasted this before. It's like, oh, yeah, it's just rum and dragon fruit. Oh, what's a dragon fruit? And then you go down a rabbit hole there. But I think there's so many different things that you could bring to a rum recipe. It's just like nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really curious to see how your fruit run goes. And love to hear about that next episode. I enjoy trying different fruit too.
I should have plenty to talk about after that after this trip. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much easier sometimes to. I've gone to the store and just gotten guava nectar and things like that, but to actually have that fresh fruit and juice it yourself, I think, is next level. And you can tell the difference. And that's what I think a lot of those really high-end tiki bars that get world-renowned do is with that the fresh ingredients. I don't think you can emphasize enough fresh ingredients in cocktails.
I would agree. And maybe you even underestimate what a huge secret ingredient guava juice is. If you can get close to fresh guava juice, I don't know if there's anything that mixes better with rum than pure guava juice. It's just amazingly smooth and rich and not overpowering and complimentary. And then you almost can't screw up a drink once you have a rum and guava juice to start with.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed everything I made with it. I did a lot of multi-rum, multi-ingredient, like very, very, I don't know how you would say it, like beach resort looking things in the end, the way I garnished it and everything, which was fun. But I'd like to try it a bit more, and with something probably fresher than just going to the store and getting whatever those bottles are or cans.
Yeah, and you've got to be careful because a lot of guava juice is, you know, especially in the U.S., is cut. Cut with grape juice, white grape juice, or is mixed in with a blend of other juices, which by and large is grape juice and some apple juice. Right. And you really do want guava puree, which is really hard to find. So you're better off just buying guavas, which are also really hard to find. So it's not an easy fruit to work with, but when you get your hands on it, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I worked on a little bit, which I have to have in a future episode, I know a lot of people have been experimenting lately with the Plantation Fiji because it came out somewhat recently, and it has a lot of good flavor in that rum, but it doesn't really get released, in my opinion, without mixing it with some higher quality ingredients, because being Plantation, they dosed it with some sugar, and I think it mutes some of the raw flavor that rum has. It's such a potential of. And I mixed it with some kiwi juice. And as you said, it, like, learning to work with these fruits is a challenge in itself. Like,
it is.
You know, I tried just to juice a kiwi with a hand juicer, like just a typical bar one where you put the half in one of the sides and squeeze it down. And it was a huge mess. I think what I ended up doing was putting it in a blender. I cut it into little sections and put it in a blender. And that worked pretty well. But it's a lot of effort to get a little bit of juice. But the kiwi juice is a game changer being fresh in the cocktail.
It's good. You really can only get it fresh. And I'm with you. Really, you can only blend it. There's just the only way to deal with a kiwi is to blend it. But another fruit that mixes wonderfully well and really complements a rum. And now that you've mentioned Plantation Fiji, which is at the top of my try next list, I think I'm going to grab that today for potentially next week's rum, since we're both talking about it. And contrast these fruits that we're talking about with something that's strange, notoriously difficult to work with, the banana, which, depending on the state of the banana, has a completely different flavor every day from day to day, whether it's soft and sweet or firm and sour or potentially bitter. And then you have to offset that with everything else you're doing. Right. Those are like the expert category of live fruits if you're going to deal with that and get a good flavor to come out. But the kiwis, boy, you drop those in a blender and start there, and you're just you can't fail at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've experimented with a little bit of banana before too. And yeah, it's I think what I've done is I've chopped the banana into little sections and then muddled at the bottom of a cocktail shaker. And it gets an okay amount of the flavor. I think it's just so much easier for me to use creme de banana in my recipes. But there is certainly something to say about having the fresh fruit.
Yeah, I try to avoid the creams when I can, especially the creme de banana. I will fall back on it when somebody makes a request. But I love mixing a banana with an overly sweet fruit. And getting some sort of mash or pulp or blend, you know, whether it's banana and strawberry or banana and blueberry or something very sweet. And then introducing rums to that to sort of draw out those the best of each other. Those are really challenging, and you can't, for my money, you're always left at the mercy of what a creme de banana can pull out versus a banana, right? You get the banana flavor, but it's not helping. It's just giving you that banana flavor. Whereas the banana is sort of it the extra effort of the fruit really does add something to the drink when you can afford the luxury of the time and the effort to put it together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the banana gives it a little bit more consistency and depth for sure. And I really like creme de banana for mixing in like half an ounce. I think more than that, and you're going to have just an artificial banana extravaganza in your drink.
Yep.
I think half an ounce goes pretty well. Or a quarter of an ounce even. But yeah.
Yeah, it can be very overpowering, yeah.
Absolutely. But I think using the banana itself is quite a good treat if you have the time to muddle it up and all that. I mean, how do you usually use it? Do you put it in a blender? Do you muddle it?
I'll blend it typically. I save the muddling for something I'm going to mix with raw, like demerara sugar, like a mojito or something,
right,
where I want to get all that mix and have that. But for bananas and some other fruits, I'll blend those typically into a puree.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I will have to try that. I think the only time I've tried blending the banana, because especially when I was starting out, I didn't blend as much. And it's something I've gotten into a bit more recently. I'm still not a huge, like, blend the entire cocktail in a blender person. I'm very much like the cocktail shaker type of person. But I tried a lava flow, and that was amazing, having that all blended up with the strawberries and the bananas and everything. And you have you basically make two batches. One has the alcohol, other one has more of the fruit, and you pour them in from opposite sides and they swirl together. It's such a cool experience. And I can see now why you blend the bananas and make the puree, because that tasted amazing.
That sounds like a fun drink to make and to present, right? To pour for people. That just seems like it would be so much fun. I really like that one. Yeah, I would normally prepare that drink and I wouldn't think about the presentation. I'd be so worried about the flavor, I wouldn't think about pouring it like that. That's brilliant, because that really sort of adds to the mystique of the drink, right?
Right. And I can't take any credit for that. I have a coworker who loves going to Hawaii too. And she told me about how when she goes there, she has to have a lava flow from a certain place. And every time she's come to the US and try to get a lava flow at a tiki restaurant that offers it, it's never the same at all to her. So I said, let me have a look and try it out. And I just followed step-by-step liquor.com's instructions, and it made an amazing drink. I can't say enough about liquor.com's inspiration for me, but they're pretty good at it. And I think if you know, I didn't use the exact ingredients they always said. I think one of the arts of mixology is using your own and knowing what you can sub. Because, I mean, you're going to be out a lot of money if you use exactly every type of rum that a site might suggest or every type of liqueur. I think substitution is pretty important.
I cannot agree with you more. I mean, I have 40 bottles of rum sitting here right now, and I just can't imagine if I pull out a recipe and it says use this particular year of rum from this particular distillery that I would just have to move into a new house so I could house all the rum bottles. You really do have to have a sort of a sense that I can look at a bottle, I can smell something and remind me what it tastes like and go, this should be pretty close to a 7-year Smith and Cross or something. With that being said, there are some good standards to always fall back on that will help you a lot. And when you find the two or three you really like, that will go a long way too. So you can say, okay, well, this is sort of like this generic rum with these other notes, so I can pull those together somehow. But it is really challenging. It would be near impossible to have to source ingredients every week for whatever drink it's your fancy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of people on Rum Reddit have talked about the Smuggler's Cove book, which I haven't gotten myself. I'd like to look into it at some point, and how it helps you build a base rum collection to be able to use those rums in pretty much any drink, because, you know, like you were saying, it these recipes, I mean, it's whatever the person who's designing the recipe had on hand. So they could call for something pretty obscure, or even if it's not obscure, you just can't afford to buy every bottle. So to me, it's more important with the recipe. Is it talking about Jamaican rum? Okay, is it aged? Is it white rum? Is it overproof? Is it just like a normal pot still or a blended? And then obviously you have Bajan rum from Barbados and Demerara. I think that's much more important. I think one of the things that I focused on personally is having an example or two of each type of rum, like each island country or country it comes from. So you have that versatility. Now I have favorite Jamaican rum, to be sure. I think I have the most of that. But I love Jamaican rum, and it goes together in so many cocktails.
And and here we can talk about changing love of rum from rum ignorance to rum education. For so many years and so many rums, I was oblivious to really taking the time to understand how the location the rum was sourced from changed its recipe. Now I'm obsessed by it. Right now I want to know, oh, this is a Venezuelan rum. Okay, I have these expectations or various other things. So that's something that's been a new part of it for me, a new discovery part of it for me, especially as I got into the high-end rums, the Diplomatico and the Foursquare and all those other things where it's like, wow, these are really good and unique. And oh, yeah, their location is so important to who they are and what their taste is. It's just amazing. The book you were referencing, the drink book, is that one of the Beach Bum Berry recipe books?
I think this one is specifically a Smuggler's Cove tiki guide.
Okay.
Sure, one of our listeners will know a lot more about it. Like I said, I'll share an email address in the notes, and we'll probably eventually get some more contact sites available. But yeah, I know a lot of people on our tiki on Reddit got it for Christmas. It seems like almost every post around Christmas time was somebody getting it.
Yeah, it's I have the Beach Bum Bearing ones and a couple of others, but I don't remember seeing that one around here. So now I've got to, if everybody else has got it, now I got to get it.
Right. That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah. I do a lot of my research online, but there's nothing like having that book in your hand that you can just quickly go to.
Yeah. I guess one of the fun things about that too, is you can look at a drink recipe and immediately think, oh, this looks good. Oh, but I wouldn't put that much orange juice in. And immediately,
right.
You know, you're already tweaking it for your personal tastes and stuff, or you're substituting rums, or it's like, oh, no, I'm going to try that new rum instead of the white rum here.
Absolutely.
So those drinks are like a template as opposed to, you know, something written in law on a stone tablet.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's what moves mixology to an art form rather than just, you know, imitation or following a recipe directly. I think that's what kind of makes you a mixologist without actually being at a bar and serving people.
It can have the opposite effect too. It can make you a bit snobby because you'll never want to go to a bar and order a mojito again unless you see somebody make it and they make it correctly. Oh, you don't want it.
Very true.
You're going to make that with syrup? No, I'm done. Give me a beer.
Yeah. It's like I went to a tiki bar locally that has an amazing aesthetic. I love the way they decorated it, but the bartender gave me a drink he was really excited about, and I immediately like tasted way too much creme de menthe. It was just swimming in creme de menthe. I said, does this have creme de menthe in it? He's like, let me look. It's like, oh yeah, it does. I'm like, yeah, like, I thought so. But I just drank it politely. And I think that's important too. Once you really know what you're talking about and doing, like, you know, still going to a bar and supporting them and knowing that, you know, that's their place of work. And it's never good to come off as snobby or anything like that. And they still probably know more than you do about plenty of other things.
Oh yeah, for sure. Right. Yeah, I can't wait till I can drop by Lost River again. And I was just talking with a friend of mine last night, and I know he swung by there and got their takeout cocktail kit.
Oh yeah,
and they had the puree mixes of each of their tiki drinks and a bag of Pebble Ice of all things, which is sort of the best ice you can get, right? Yeah. Pebble Ice is all the rage.
I wouldn't mind that at all.
And you know, you pick it all up and take it home and make your own drink. You supply the mug.
Yeah, Navy Strength here in Seattle, which is a fairly recent bar. I think it opened up 2 years ago now. It made a pretty big splash. I think it got into like a top 10 list at one point. their interior is fairly well decorated. It's not quite as over the top as I kind of like sometimes, but there's a time and a place for that. And their cocktails are extremely elaborate, and they're doing to-go kits. I think they're like $50, $60 where you get everything you need for the drink. I think you can even have them throw a tiki mug in there.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Yeah. I love what the creativity and keeping everything going. I'll still be happy when I can go there again, but I'm really happy that these businesses are finding ways to survive, creative ways to survive this difficult period.
Absolutely. And I heard the guy who owns Navy Strength on a mixology podcast, and he was talking about how he's given his workers healthcare even when they were shut down, which I thought was really cool.
Wow, that's classy.
Yeah. So I think it's really important for us to support our local places as much as we can through these times. And we're probably about out of time for our first episode. Really appreciate everybody joining us, and I hope you enjoyed it and tune in for the next one. Just real quick to kind of give it a wrap, since we focused on Dr. Bird this episode and talked a lot about Jamaican rum. I'm curious, Guy, what you would say your favorite Jamaican rum is.
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. I don't. Now I can't remember what's Jamaican and what isn't. So,
yeah, you have a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So I you put me on the spot and I'm going to completely melt down, completely blanking. I'd have to go. Actually, I'd actually have to walk over to the bar and look.
Go ahead.
It's something that I was actually going to do last night and got too distracted by my painkiller. Was to sort out all my rums by location so I could sort of make mental notes of instead of allowing it to be all mixed up in my head. And I remember the last one or two bottles I've touched, and I can't remember anything else. I was going to do some sorting and collating so I could better remember things. You know, it's sort of like playing an instrument. You know, you can sight read anything, but if you really just want to pick up the instrument and play it when you're in somebody else's house, you better really know it. And I haven't been that good about memorizing things about rums and various other things. So that's one of the things that it's going to get elevated by our efforts here is all of these questions that I sort of stumbled through now, weeks down the road or months down the road. I feel like I will be far better educated on all of this stuff because I'm going to put the effort back into reclassifying and relearning some of this stuff that I've taken for granted.
Yeah. That sounds really cool to organize it by location. My rum shells right now are kind of a mess of what will fit on there because I've allowed myself to accumulate too much during the pandemic and need to start emptying some bottles. But I would love to have mine laid out that way too. And I think, you know, with this podcast, like we have said a couple times, we don't claim to be experts. We're learning like you, our audience, are. And we definitely welcome your interaction. And look forward to joining everybody again. And just real quick, since I tossed that question out there, I probably have to say my favorite Jamaican rum is, you know, gun to my head, probably Appleton 12 year. I just think it's amazing for mixing and sipping. And it has that funk to it, but has so many other nice flavors to it. That it still has that fruitiness and that really buttery, smooth flavor. And I could only drink that rum for, you know, on a desert island or something like that, I think I'd be pretty happy with it.
I remember 10 years ago when that was the most expensive rum you could buy.
Oh, wow.
And there was really nothing else above Appleton 12, right? Yeah, and I probably still have a bottle, but so much times have changed, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I feel so ignorant sometimes. It's like, what's your favorite rum? I haven't really thought about it long enough. I'm going to have to do that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to enjoy that process.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I think that's probably all the time we have today, but thanks everyone again for joining us. We really hope you enjoyed it. Please feel free to let us know if there's anything you'd like us to bring to the table next episode, if you have any suggestions or tweaks. You know, at the end of the day, we just want to develop a community with all of our fellow rum lovers and just have a rum discussion and keep each other company during the pandemic.
Yes.
So from Deco and Guy, thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Until then, keep running that rum.
Mahalo!